100% born in the Appalachian Mountains and made in the USA, Timber Ninja Outdoors provides a range of mobile hunting options to accommodate diverse hunting preferences. Whether you prioritize comfort, lightweight design, or versatility, their two-panel and single-panel saddles collection has something for everyone. The Black Belt Nano is the lightest single-panel saddle available on the market, weighing in under a pound. The saddle is designed with the minimalist hunter in mind, focusing on lightweight functionality and breathability. One notable feature is the patent-pending magnetic stick clip system on the side, which allows for convenient transportation of sticks up the tree, as well as a built-in platform holder. The Nano saddle can be folded up to the size of a Nalgene bottle, enabling easy portability. With a four-way stretch material on the back for a comfortable fit, as well as strategically placed padding for hip pinch relief, you can use code EASTMEETSWEST to get free shipping on any Timber Ninja order. If you try it out and don't like it, send it back within 30 days for a full refund. Learn more at TimberNinjaOutdoors.com and sign up for their email newsletter for exclusive discounts and product drops. Maven makes the highest quality optics at half the price of their competitors through their direct-to-consumer business model. The brand new B7 represents the expansion of their compact lineup and is designed to be more compact and portable than their acclaimed B3 Bino. With a smaller objective lens, the binocular takes a significant leap in terms of size reduction. The B7 is available in both an 8x and 10x option, making it their most compact premium binocular yet. If you're looking for something that will fit in your pocket for deer hunting, turkey hunting, or scouting missions, but still want crystal clear optics, check out the new B7 from Maven. All their optics come with a lifetime, no-fault warranty. If you run it over with your truck or your significant other chucks it at your head, they'll repair or replace it. Use code EASTMEETSWEST-GIFT for a free gift on any full-price optics order at mavenbuilt.com. Better Backstrap's mission is to provide the highest quality seasoning for the meat you work so hard for. They wanted to give hunters another choice besides the big box store brands full of fillers and preservatives. Born right here in Pennsylvania, Better Backstrap Seasonings will turn up the taste of your wild game. Right now, you can pick up their sampler gift box, which includes gun season garlic, tall tine taco, and the original seasoning in a custom gift box. You can use the code EASTMEETSWEST for free shipping at betterbackstrap.com. For all of those that want a truck bed cover for work or play, Diamondback makes the top-of-the-line, heavy-duty covers that help you do more with your truck. They're perfect for the truck-owning, avid sportsmen, outdoor enthusiasts, and weekend project warriors. I'm currently using the HD cover that is capable of holding up to 1,600 pounds on the top, and then I have the Yakima Overhaul HD bars on top so I can put my rooftop tent on it. When I'm not using my rooftop tent and able to use the trifold design of the Diamondback, I have the Crossbin 8 in there to organize all of my stuff in the back of my truck bed. Diamondback is made right here in Phillipsburg, Pennsylvania. If you want to check them out, head over to diamondbackcovers.com.
Are you an adventurer looking to take your hunt to the next level? Then you're in the right place. Welcome to East Meets West Hunt with your host, Bo Martonic.
Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of the East Meets West Hunt podcast presented by Spartan Forge. On this week's episode, this is part two of the episode with Johnny Stewart, Mason Martonic, and my dad, Joe Martonic. So in this episode, if you haven't went back, listen to the other one I released a few days ago. That is kind of the beginning of the conversation and found a good transition point here as we focused more on November and the rut. So the second part of this is going to be focused about the pre-rut, rut time frame still, but specific topics include favorite dates to hunt during the rut, looking at this year specifically with the moon phases, weather, all those different things. So going through that, bear and does versus some of the doe groups, perfect rut hunting setups, doe groups versus funnels, logging cuts, and then also one thing that each of these individuals went through to think that if they could give you one piece of advice, what would make you a better hunter, more successful during the rut with that one piece of advice. So split up this episode, like I said, into two parts, and just felt like over 2 hours is tough to be able to get through. So I figured by splitting it up, it'd be easier to be able to consume. So I really, really enjoyed these episodes with these guys. I hope that you find it valuable. And as this is coming out here, it's go time, man. It's time to get after it in the deer woods. So as always, good luck to everybody. And if you like the podcast, please give it a rating and review wherever you listen to it at. Share it with your friends. You have no idea how much that helps out. So greatly appreciate it. And good luck. We'll talk to you soon. What about though? All right. So let's shift a little bit. Let's shift to November. I'm going to start with Mason. What are your favorite dates to hunt?
That's an easy one, Mason.
Whatever the weather's telling me, I just like cold mornings. And if it's cold all day, even better. But to me, the dates don't matter as much. If it's
sunny,
November.
Rain, snow.
But is there a date that you start the target?
No, just all weather.
When do you get off work?
It's
like tomorrow morning.
I like the last couple of days of October.
Yeah.
November 1st. I feel like I see more chasing like the 1st to the 7th in this area, and then sometimes it seems like between the 6th and the 10th, 11th, sometimes you can get periods where you don't see much of anything going on.
It's locked down.
And I kind of struggle with finding the action there sometimes. And then the last few days of the season, I kind of like those days too.
Yeah.
It's usually bitter cold, kind of. You're sitting there questioning your whole life. What are you doing here? But
at that point, you've already like exhausted like all your vacation days. You're like you've already sat dark to dark many times, and you're just like, I know nothing about deer. Deer aren't real.
I'm stupid.
Yeah. I feel like we got to tie it back to the whole. Your survey too, with nobody having confidence in what they're doing, is like, I guess just do what you have confidence in, just keep you in the mental game
and you won't ever get confidence without having experience. So like you have to throw things at it, and sometimes it's not going to work out. You might have years that no one likes to hear that, but sometimes I've screwed it up many times where I've had times where even after years of experience, I try something, and like when Justin was here filming for the long haul film, I had a spot that I thought was going to be really good. We sat there for 4 days and I saw one buck, another deer the entire time.
And during the rut, I mean, who knows? Anything can happen.
Right.
I've seen big bucks in really weird spots. I would never think to go hunt. Right. Yeah. So it's like, just go with what you have confidence in. Just keep yourself in the mental game.
Dad, what are your dates?
I'd say from the 28th on, between the
every day in the rut.
November 28th?
October 28th.
He's talking November.
Well, no, and yeah.
Did you say November?
When, yeah, no. I did, but the rut.
Yeah, I start end of October, John.
Some of us aren't slackers, John.
I don't wait till like November 1st like you do.
Yeah, I'm a slacker.
No, November 14th like you
do. 14th.
No, I think that the best dates are the 28th through to maybe like the 7th, 8th. Now, the full moon this year, I know some people discard that as an influencer.
The full moon brings the cold weather, though, too.
It does. I think it depends on whether it's overcast during the full moon or not. I think it messes with your photo senses, and it shuts the rut down sometimes. Just my opinion, but so I don't know. I mean, the full moon's the 8th this year, but I think to me the best dates are going to be like from the 28th to the 5th is when I hope to have one killed by then. If I don't, then hopefully I'm wrong about the moon. Or I'll just take a few days and go back to work and then hunt it afterwards.
Yeah, it's just the later in the season, the more stressful it gets too.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I hope that you're right, because I haven't said on the podcast yet, but I'll be going, which I don't matter because I'm still going to be hunting, but I'm going to be in Alberta again from November 6th through like the 13th or whatever, which is my favorite time to hunt in Pennsylvania. Nice. And again, John, you look at me like, oh, poor you. You know, you get to go to Alberta during that time. But I love Pennsylvania those dates. Like that's if I'm just going to jump to me on this.
Yeah.
Like I like November the 6th, 7th through like the 12th. Like those are my dates. I think what Mason said about you have the periods of kind of like lockdown, slow type periods, those definitely happen. But I think the biggest deer are going to move then. Actually, I think the biggest deer that I've ever had on camera, November 15th, 16th, 17th, those time frames. But it's ridiculously slow, I feel like.
Yeah.
But you have like, that's when the old 7-8-year-old bucks that are your dream bucks of your lifetime are just out for cruises at like noon.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just, again, that's my experience and what I think. It's really hard to, at that point, to make it through that that mental grind. But like that's what's killing me, because the one buck that I'm hunting, he's, I think November 14th or 15th are when I would have the best chance of killing that deer. Or Halloween, because 2 years ago is when I had the encounter with him, October 30th, which is a Sunday this year. But there was a doe group that in this area 2 years in a row, they went into heat at that time, because one, I had personal experience. Second year I had cameras. I didn't see any bucks, but I saw does running through the camera. It's like, okay, they're getting chased.
Yeah. Yeah.
But that's, I personally like, I've actually never killed a deer, anywhere from the October 28th to 31st. I've had opportunities that I've either screwed up or not able to. I think that's a really good time. And then that November, 7th to 12th is like what I would choose personally. What about you, John?
Well, first thing I want to say, Bo, since I'm such a bro of yours, a buddy, I mean, when you're out there, old Alberta, and you got that spot where that shooter's going to be chasing them doe, maybe I'll sit in your stand for you, keep an eye on.
I do owe you one.
I think the father-son role reversal is going to start happening now.
I've given you opportunities.
You have.
I have a pretty good spot. I didn't offer to you, John. I apologize. But I said, you want to, he came in there once, chat hunt with me. I said, you want to run some cameras in here? Hunt it with me. I need some help. I need some extra people in here to try to hunt these deer. I said, obviously I'm not, I haven't killed a buck in that area since 2017. I was like, I think I could use some help, and he's not jumping on it. So I might have to push that off.
It's the same area that I was going to sell you the information to.
Oh, okay. I got a good spot for you, John. Yeah, I got a good spot.
It's going to cost you a little bit, John.
John, if I thought I had a spot better than any of your spots to offer up, you're welcome to go to any of my spots at any time.
Yeah.
You know that.
Anyways, about the dates.
I didn't ask you. I'm just kidding.
You did ask me.
Did I?
All right. But yeah, let me know when you're going to Alberta. Give me all your pins. You know what I mean? And give me all as much info as you can.
Yeah.
And I'll keep an eye on them spots.
Yeah.
Me and Joe. Maybe Mason.
Them. Make sure the bucks are doing what they need.
Yeah. But anyways, I think my last few years, like 4th through the 7th, 4th, 5th, 6th, 7th, I feel like it's like peaking as far as not like, you're looking maybe the does and heat might be about the 10th, 11th or something, but I feel like, that's right on the fringe right there when everything's going nuts. Yeah. I know last year every camera I had was, there was bucks on them.
I like it when they're searching better than when they're, when the does are actually in heat, because then I feel like you have more lockdown type. Like looking like that 4th through 7th, like you're talking about there, that's a good time for them to be kind of.
You're right. Yeah, it's like right there. Everything's like, and then when you get a bunch of does in heat, then it's like, and then one question I got from like maybe Joe is like something like you look at, or you guys, doe bedding areas. Hmm. How about like barren does, like does that, there's some old ass does out there.
Yeah,
I mean,
definitely.
How do you deal with that? But is it just, you think they still are with the rest of the herd, so it's a good spot to hunt in general because there's does there? Or do you think there's like these old ass girls out there that they're just going on their own?
I think they're pushed out on their own.
Yeah, and so like you might be hunting does.
That one doe they've been filming that called Floppy Ear.
Yeah.
What was it, 14 and a half years? I didn't get him this year, or didn't get her this year. But
yeah,
I
remember both.
I didn't throw the camera. I didn't get my camera in until middle of June this year. It's a spot I usually run a camera year round, but I had camera trouble. I pulled it back in February, March, and I never got a camera back in there until June. But prior to that, I always picked her up middle of May, towards the middle of June, and then she would disappear. And I think something happened to her, you know, especially when she started getting 7, 8 years old. But the next year, running the camera, and I hunted that area, and I never would see, I never had laid eyes on her. I never have. It's just the camera shows me. She has an inverted ear, and it's been since birth. I mean, when she was a yearling, I had her. And, but she always, when she got, after she started without fawns, she'd only appear by herself. She would never be with other doe groups.
Mm-hmm.
You know, where you might see two or three other does together. She was never part of it. She would always show up in that camera by herself. You know, after maybe she was 7 or 8 years old. Before that, she was with doe groups. But after that, she was always by herself.
Poor girl.
No.
She got kicked out. Kind of like you, John. People kicked you out of their groups a long time ago.
But no, I can't blame them. Kind of shoot the bucks.
You looking for a group, John, to join?
I'm going
to
join Joe's group. Me and Joe's going to kill all the bucks and everybody kick us out because we'll kill all the bucks. Maybe.
You're only allowed one.
After another. I got all the states I'm going to hunt. I'm going to just drop them.
All right. That's a good mentality to have.
I'm going to start tomorrow morning. You guys are going to be about...
But no, I do believe that barren does will get pushed out of the doe group. I could be wrong on that. It just... From that,
I know in general you're like, oh, does are here. Look at that big doe. But maybe you're hunting like for bucks to come. Maybe you're hunting a doe that's like no buck wants her because she's done. You know, especially up here. I know like that doe he shot up here tonight. Boy, that was an old girl. I should have looked at the teeth, but I bet you know. I'm sure they're up here like what you saw.
You know, 13, 14 years old. I mean, I know it was on Kip's property, which you guys have all been on. Obviously, it's a giant chunk of private, but it was one that was tagged in 2012 that Kip's brother, Kobe, shot last year in rifle season. I got to see that thing was ragged looking. Yeah, and it still had the tag on it from when they tagged it way back.
Get out.
That long. That was a 14-year-old doe, you know, because it was tagged as an adult doe at that point. Wow. And the biologist that had tagged it was there and was, you know, confirmed it. And it was just, you know, crazy that she's all alone, just kind of just not looking good.
That's pretty amazing, though. Like, I mean, everybody talks about bucks, but does are half the battle, too. You know what I mean? And so it's probably more important that you see these does. But then again, during the rut, you'll see a single doe because maybe the fawns are run off. But, you know, I think when you're looking for does and a place to hunt doe beddings is maybe with fawns and like healthier, you know, does that maybe produce, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Do you guys like to hunt like a specific doe bedding? Are you trying to be in like in between a bunch or just like a travel corridor knowing that there's probably doe bedding around? Let's actually start Mason with that one. Like, do you focus on like when you're looking at like your rut setups? Are you looking at doe bedding at all? Or are you just trying to find funnels or what?
I'd say all the above, really. Time of year, I don't know. Man, I don't know. I'd say all the above can be good, right? During the rut, I don't know what's. You don't know what a buck's going to do on a given day. Sometimes I like to sit all over the does, like you said, find a doe group, and doe groups are more consistent. It seems like if you're not boogering them up, they're going to be there day in, day out for the most part. I would consider like a doe group like a destination spot, and then there could be other spots that I'd consider destination spots where a buck's going to want to go check on. And sometimes I'd try and find a funnel where it's like if he's going from one destination spot to another destination spot or from a couple to another couple, it's like where's he gonna have to walk through, right? And I try and find those spots and set up too if it's during the rut. If it's before the rut, like between now and the end of October, I don't know. I guess I don't have a good strategy. I just try and get close to scrapes and funnels, places I just feel confident in.
Yeah.
I wouldn't say I'm right on the does between now and the end of October, but during the rut, I'm either right on the does or places I think they're going to run through to get from doe group to doe group.
Yeah. I'd say the exact same thing. Like, I think for the most part, I don't hunt on a specific doe group. I do, like, if I know or I have an idea from historical stuff, like if a doe group comes in, like, okay, bucks were chasing a doe around this area at that time, I'll log that data and I might want to go back there the same time next year because there's a good chance that she comes in to heat that same time. But then as I get in the rut, I want to be in those travel areas where they're trying to find does. You know, I'm in that spot in between. And sometimes I don't know, like I don't always have like, oh, there's a doe group bedded here, there's a doe group bedded here, there's a doe group bedded here. A lot of times you find those funnels, like there's going to be does somewhere around. And, you know, obviously if there's deer sign that there's going to be does somewhere there, you don't have to know exactly where they're at all the time, in my opinion.
Yeah, the does are mingling too. They're not just hanging out one little spot. They're getting around.
But there is like, I know of a situation where, I don't know, it's probably 5 years ago now, but there's a spot they liked in these blowdowns that they would bed in, and I always like was in between where there was a doe group that would bed out in these hemlocks, and then, you know, 600-700 yards down there was a doe group that bed in these blowdowns. I always sat in the middle of them, but then I was like, okay, I remember going in and I was just kind of scouting because I wasn't having good luck, and I was just scouting through and I was like, there's does in these blowdowns all the time. It just smelled like just deer, and I'm like, I set up right on the edge of it, and I had an encounter. I didn't get a shot or anything at a buck, but I had a great encounter there. At that point, I focused on that doe group because it just seemed like a spot. Or looking at cameras, this is something that you and I have talked about quite a bit, Dad, where if you have a camera, where whether you check it that morning or if it's a cell camera, but if a doe beds down in the scrape or around the scrape, she's probably hot.
Or even hits the scrape. Or that, you can tell just from her mannerism.
Mm-hmm. When you say you can tell by the mannerism, what do you mean?
Well, hitting the scrape and just kind of hanging around and hitting it multiple times.
Yeah.
It's not like it hits and leaves.
Yeah,
because she hits it, she stays around. Yeah, she's hanging around that scrape and bedded by the scrape in the background or whatever. But yeah, for sure.
I see that. I'm like, well, I could be there.
Yeah, yeah, that doe the other night to hit that scrape that me and you put out, like the summertime does, like not one buck hit it. There was a doe group living there or whatever, and they'd hit it. And then it kind of dried up as far as like I would catch does just like end of September, October, you know, when the daylight started getting shorter. They didn't hit the scrape. And then the other night, she actually hit the scrape, and that's when 7 bucks were there. So it's like, and that might be that first doe out of the, you know, that might be, that's where I said the one come in the 25th there, or was right there, right on the fringes there last year. Maybe that's her. So I'm and then a lot of scrapes are popping up in that area, and rubs daily. I walk just right close to the road. I'm like, you know, you got all these different bucks here, and they're, you know, they're smelling. You know, they live by their nose. They might travel a mile or two at night just to see where that first one is. And it's like, so I'm just going to stick with that area. But as far as the doe, like doe groups and where to bed, I feel like in the past, all the time I put in the woods, whether it's spring, summer, fall, make a mental note of where you're jumping does, where you push does.
Yeah.
Because basically a buck's going to do the same thing. Where do I see does? Where, you know, so kind of put yourself in his shoes and be like, and a lot of areas, it depends on topo. Like a lot of areas I'm hunting are kind of like flat and graduals to where it isn't that funnel. And it's big woods. We're talking about big woods areas where it's like, he's here. He's just like in his mind, I want to go to that doe. So you don't know where he is to access those does, you know what I mean? There's not much of a funnel. It's just kind of like, so get a little tighter to where them does live. And like Joe said, they're kind of like feed and bed all in the same area. It's not like they're traveling. Yeah, they do travel, but with that, like the matriarch, they just kind of stay around and hang around this one, maybe half mile or, you know, even less than that. But if you know, you're in the woods and you jump does, whether it's far, you know, and you see them beds, it's just put that mental note in there and just get kind of downwind or close to that, because I feel like, you know, if there is terrain, then maybe there is a funnel to get to them, but in the most part there might not. And he's just going to beeline to that downwind side of that area.
Yeah, definitely going to work the downwind side of it, and I think the doe bedding varies.
The Spartan Forge app utilizes years of military background and machine learning to pull from millions of data points to accurately predict deer movement with over 30 years of GPS collar data, trail camera data, academic, and state research. The app is a complete tool for planning your hunt with incredible aerial imagery, mapping, journaling, and some of the most accurate and detailed weather data. The latest update is huge. One feature that I'm using a lot during the rut is LiDAR. LiDAR basically removes the trees from the landscape and allows you to see every nook and cranny, logging road, boulder, etc., with some areas having 1 meter data, which just means that you can see any deviation in the land as small as 3 feet. During the rut, I will look for logging trails that intersect with key terrain features such as ditches or draws to funnel deer movement. Use the code EASTMEETSWEST to save 20%. And if you're still on the fence, give the 14-day free trial a chance at SpartanForge.ai. CVA has been America's number one selling muzzleloader brand for over a decade. Hunting with a muzzleloader opens up a ton of hunting opportunities across the U.S., and I've been using the Acura series. But they don't only make badass muzzleloaders. Their line of centerfire rifles are great quality and not terrible on the wallet. The Cascade short barrel is ideal for tight quarters, deer drives, and for quick shots in the big woods. You can check out their line of muzzleloaders, rifles, and accessories for every season and every range at bpioutdoors.com/CVA. If you use the code EASTMEETSWEST10, you'll get 10% off of all CVA products, which includes rifles, muzzleloaders, and accessories.
Throughout the year, based on food availability, especially in the fall, you know, when the mushrooms start popping, they may be constant, you know, maybe more in the beach brush or the old logging cuts or the stumps, because there's mushrooms in there and good browse. Or like when the black cherry were dropping earlier, your doe bedding were, you know, they bed close to their food source as long as they're not pressured. When you don't have the mass crops or the apples and you just have browse, that kind of makes it easier, because where you do see these doe groups, they earlier tend to stay in that area.
100%.
They're not going to move so much to the food source because they have the browse food. I mean, they're always going to have that. It's just if they have an overpowering food that's available to them in the area, they may gravitate towards that, and that doe bedding may shift on you. But the scrapes, I still think, in my opinion, the scrapes are, you know, especially the community scrapes, they're built there for a reason, because that is a community area for the deer. Them does are bedding in that area. They come through there periodically. I mean, that's why that scrape's there. And I think that's why that's more of a money, where some of these other, you know, the testosterone-driven scrapes, some of them may just be a food source-driven scrape, where the does are hanging around this, you know, the black cherry or the oaks, and a buck comes through and hits a scrape just to let them know, hey, I'm here, and, you know,
yeah,
let me know who else is here.
Well, and I think, like, one thing that I've also noticed, and this really works in, like, steeper country, but, like, where you have, say, does bed and they're beelining, say, up or down ridge to a food source, those bucks will move, you know, perpendicular to them, so they can cut those trails.
Yeah. Yes.
And cut the scent. Yes. So if you're finding, like, heavy trails that are running, say, north to south, just for discussion standpoint, north to south, a lot of times bucks will run east to west or some variation of that to cross those trails, mm-hmm. and check as they're cruising during the rut. So that's one thing I'll pay attention to. Like, heavy trails, you know, a lot of times heavy trails are does, you know,
mm-hmm.
that are doing that. And if you find those faint trails that are, you know, going perpendicular, sometimes they're not even on a trail, but the fact that, you know, that's the way that they're going to want to run. Mm-hmm. That's something I've noticed in steeper country more so than flatter big woods. But
listening to you guys talk more made me think more about the original question too, is as far as, are you sitting on does or funnels too, where I think early November, I'm leaning more towards trying to find where the where the does are and just getting in that area and hoping a buck chases a doe by me, right? Where the last week of the season of November, if I haven't filled my tag yet, I'm probably sitting in a funnel trying to catch a buck moving from one area to the next.
Just trying to find a doe that's left at that point.
Yeah. Just looking for that midday zombie walker.
Oh, those are great.
Yeah.
Yeah, because that time of the year, if they're locked down or have a doe that they're chasing, they're pushing them. They're pushing them in secluded areas, so they don't get bothered. I mean, you find a buck locked down on a doe in odd areas.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
you know, because they're pushing them away. They don't want any competition. They're getting them away from the other bucks. Then when they're done breeding hers, you're trying to get in those transition zones where they're okay. I'm done. I'm gonna go find another doe group.
Yep.
And that's where those funnels are money, setting up on that type of pattern.
Right.
And then I like talking about all this and then like what I witnessed, how that doe hit the scrape and them 7 bucks were there. Then all of a sudden another buck showed up and made a scrape 20 yards from there. And that tells me that, like, in my opinion, that's like, he's the man. You know, he's like, I ain't messing with that scrape. Because last year there was a monster buck in there. I ain't seen him yet. But he didn't show up last year till like now. So he might be like, he was downwind and made his own scrape. Like, and just telling that doe, like, come hit my scrape. You know, like, I'm here because I feel right. like a lot of these mature doe, she know he's around or thinks. And she, they try to, I think, get together to strong survive, like the doe that's ready. She wants the best buck, so it's like stuff like that plays in my mind. Like, he made a scrape downwind. It's like, you here's where I'm at. I'm over here. You come to me, like type of thing. Like, so.
Right.
But a lot of that is like intriguing to me, not just I got it on that community scrape. And out of them 7 bucks, they were 2 and 3 year olds. Not the big one.
Yeah.
And I got one good one, probably a good 4-year-old. He never hit the scrape. I know he's in the area, and then maybe he's the one that made that scrape to the side, or the one that was there last year, came in. So it's like, I should get a camera on that. But it's just like, if that's the first doe, and he's putting his sign down over here, be like, because I'm not them. And like, I'm other. I'm going to make my own scrape. And you could say, and then she'll probably start hanging around,
Yeah,
that makes me think of a study I just heard on a podcast where they had 3 cages all on the line. They had a buck on each end and a doe in the middle, and there's a young buck on one end and an older buck on another end. Right, so doe in the middle, buck on each end, different ages. They screwed or somehow they fastened a large set of antlers to the younger buck, and a smaller set of antlers to the older buck. Right, so they cut their antlers off, and he essentially switched them, or made the younger buck have the bigger antlers, and the doe.
Is this humane?
And I don't know.
Were you dreaming this?
Out of the question. So they had a GPS collar on the doe, and the doe spent, and they switched them back and forth. The doe spent more time next to the fence where the buck had the larger antlers.
Visually.
Kind of like if Bo and I go out to the bar, the girls spend more time around me.
Yeah.
But it's kind of interesting though. Like you said, like is a doe going to go hit the bigger buck scrapes?
I do believe like the older does that have been around, and they want that mature deer. You know what I mean? Like she hit that scrape, that's the only thing around.
Yeah, but what if you're a mature deer with little scrubby antlers? So like you're mature, but.
Little scrubby.
What Johnny's trying to say though is most of the time the more mature deer have.
I think like the strong survive. Like yeah. it's made to be that way, to where the doe, the big doe's ready, healthy, ready to breed early. It's like the big guy's going to get her. You know what I mean? Like I feel like that's how it's supposed to be. But then you talk about the antlers, but does scent come into play too? Like my opinion, that older buck smells different than that young buck, right? Not just she's just going off visual. But, I would say, like, it's a smell thing, too,
Yeah, yeah, I know. I guess I don't know as far as how they determine that, but I'm sure there's like you said, between the visual and the scent, and like they know those certain deer. Like, you know, Dad, your buck last year, that deer didn't have to go anywhere. Like, he never left from the time October went to the rut. He didn't have to go looking for does; they came to him.
No, yeah. And I've been doing a lot of thinking since then. You know, for that age class of a buck, you know, is that the norm? Are they going through the whole life cycle? You know, you get the year and a half, 2.5. They're being driven away by their mother. I mean, they because they don't want inbreeding, so they're getting pushed out. Well, they get pushed out, they go, you know, a mile away, 2 miles away. Well, they get run out by a bigger buck. You know, so they're getting bounced around until they become old enough and large enough to fight. And once they establish their own doe group, is that where they end up staying?
Mm-hmm.
You know, they might wander some. I think they're like people. You get some people that don't leave an area.
That's what always, yeah.
And other people that just want to travel. So I think it's not the rule, but I think it's, I don't know. I've been thinking a lot about it.
I do too. And like, it's just what I just talked about. And like, I'm thinking about what made that scrape. Cause last year was a buck. There was a rubbing telephone poles, and his brows were this far apart. And he didn't have a lot of times, but he was like this. Like, I'm like, and I'm sure he was a 6-8 year old.
How many cameras did you have in there?
Well, last year I just put two in there, cause I found the telephone pole.
Where, okay.
You know, and then now I got my cameras all through there.
Yeah.
And on that scrape, I got 3-4, and I got a good 140. But I remember the reason I put the camera is that they started rubbing that telephone pole, and all them rubs showed up like right now. Like, I remember because I was working on camp. I didn't hunt, but I drove up that road once in a while. I'm like,
yeah, look at all these rubs. And when he says a telephone pole, he means a real telephone pole, not just a tree.
Legit. That's
yeah, an actual telephone pole.
An actual telephone pole.
I remember you showed me it.
Yeah, and then all these rubs popped up, but they didn't pop up till like, you know, like right now, the 20th, 20, you know.
Don't you have to go back to work anytime soon?
Yeah.
All right. Well, I'll keep an eye on that telephone pole.
I'll hunt in your spot. You hunt mine.
All right, trade. You're always more confident in the other person's spot than your own.
But yeah, so it's like maybe this buck, and I do believe a lot of these bucks, when they get 7-8 years old, them are the ones that they disappear during the gun season or whenever bow season's over. And guess what? Them are the first ones you find next year because they got a down pat how to survive. So I feel like that buck, I'm anxious to see if he's back there again. You know what I mean? Like, cause that's what Tommy showed up last year. And, and you know, like she's the three, like she hit that scrape, the community scrape, that's the only one there. And then, you know, all these bucks came two nights, 7 bucks were there, maybe 135, 138. And like, but I just feel like, where's the big guy? You know, and I got a 140 that never hit that scrape, an 8 for 140.
You think he might be there and just not hitting the scrape? And just
that's what I think. Cause them rubs, that's what I mean. The rubs showed up last year at this time.
Right.
And here I went today and this new scrape showed up. I'm like, it's about time. You know what I mean? Because he was running a doe there on the 25th last year. So I'm like, and I had cameras scattered all over. I just feel like I never got all summer in there, and I didn't get nothing worth shooting 2-3-year-olds, you know, bucks and all these does. It's just like, I just feel like some of these areas that I hunt, these old bucks are just out in the forest, like not even, a lot of these cuts I'm finding, like in my area, there's a 3-4-year-old deer bucks, not the old ones. I feel like, and then when I was allowed to run mineral licks, the big ones that were there, that they wouldn't even hit the mineral lick. I just feel like they're so other that they don't belong with the rest of the herd, and they're just out in the forest. I think
they definitely go out off by themselves and spend the summer until breeding season, then they move.
Because I've been hitting clear cuts
hard. Show them who's boss.
I've been hitting clear cuts hard since we can't do the licks anymore, and I'm getting 3-4-year-olds all my, like, and these clear cuts are accessible, and there's a lot of deer there, but I'm finding the doe groups and the 3-4-year-olds in my area. I'm not talking about clear cuts that are back in the woods 3 miles. You know what I mean? Right. Gated road. I'm talking about.
Yeah, you're talking about your areas that are like 40, 50 yards off the road where you can walk to.
Yeah, and I'm like, it's very easy. but what I'm saying is like, yeah, when I come up here, I don't have the time to go back in the woods, so I'm running clear cuts. That's where all the browse is, so I'm hitting these clear cuts, and I'm not getting a mature deer. You know, I know they'll be there, like, when the rut's on, but I mean, like, it's just a weird situation because everybody talks about clear cuts and how the food is there, but then you got to talk about the situation to where, like, is it accessible? Is there a lot of young deer there? Is it a high deer population? Most of the times, them 5, 6, 8-year-old deer, they don't even, they'll get their browse way out in the forest somewhere, not even come into that spot, or a secluded cut. You know what I mean? I'm seeing that in my areas because I know a lot of people in different areas that maybe run a lot of cameras and cuts. They're like, oh, I got the big bucks in there, but where is your cut? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Maybe there's, and
that is a hard thing about
cuts. And then how many cuts are there? So if you only got 4 or 5 cuts there and I got a pile of does running it and yearlings and 2-year-olds, 3-year-olds, I feel like my big old bucks that I catch there in November, they don't even mess with it. They're just like, they just don't want to be around that atmosphere with them deer, them does and them younger deer. But then, because everybody just talks about cuts, you know, you got a area that maybe there's a lot of cuts, then, well, I guess you're going to see them because that's the only areas around. But, well, you know,
and that's where cuts can be a problem too, because they usually have a road to them. That's because they have to get the log, you know, they have to get the skidders in, they got to get the trucks in, you know, there's always a road that gets to them. Now, every once in a while you can find one that's pretty remote, but for the most part, they're a lot of times near roads, and that makes it difficult for hunter access. You add pressure to it, so mature bucking can deal with that, and it makes you kind of become a little more selective with that.
I called you tonight about a cut. I run a camera in this cut this summer, and I got some 140s. Well, here at a gate, for some reason, it's closed. The forestry or whatever cut it, closed it. And I called Bo. I said, well, I got this cut. I pulled my camera in September because the road goes right through the cut, you know, and it's like, and I've seen another camera where I'm like, this is going to suck October. We're going to be guys driving up and down a road, muzzleloader, you know what I mean? And across the road from that cut is just pretty vast hemlocks. And I'm like, they're going to be nocturnal. So anyways, I pulled my camera in September or so. And then here they gated the road, the forest service gated the road because I guess they were working in there or something. Mm-hmm. So I called Bo. I said, what do you think? Should I pedal bike back there? Because no one's been back there now that the gates are closed. There's no traffic. Would there be daylight activity in that cut? I mean, it's like, it's a question that, you know, I'm not sure.
Well, you didn't listen to me. I told you yes. And then you said, I'm going to go sit this spot next to the road.
You did tell me, it would be good.
You called me for my advice, and then you didn't want it.
I know. I took your advice.
With a grain of salt.
No, you did. You said, well, I told you here's how I took it. I told you along this road I got a lot of scrapes. And you said, well, they're going to be opening up scrapes. Because I didn't say anything about scrapes back in the cut because I hadn't been here in September. They're going to start opening up scrapes. So I took it as hunt the scrapes by the road. I said, well, I'm going to go hunt by the road. But you said, I think they're after the rain.
Yeah.
And I know there was a bunch of scrapes in this spot, you know, where that doe and that. I said, well, they're going to be opening up scrapes. So I'm going to hunt that spot. That's how I took it.
Let's be honest. Let's be straightforward about it. You took his opinion. Crumpled it up and
threw it in the fire.
Put it in the suggestion box.
Yeah, that's like the employee box at work. You know, it's like give your suggestions, put it in here for things to improve, and then that never gets looked at.
But that's how I took it.
Fair enough.
Yeah, that's fine.
Yeah.
See what I do next time.
That was your good. You gave me the info and I ran with it.
Yep.
And I was 150 yards from the road, and we had this podcast to do and beer to drink. So I just kind of, instead of pedaling the bike 30 minutes.
At least you got out tonight.
Exactly.
Yeah, none of us did, so I give you credit. Just messing with you.
Give me credit.
I give you credit for not seeing anything tonight.
I even left a little early.
Did you?
I did. I had beer to drink tonight.
I actually told my dad, I said, John says he's going to be there at 7. I said, he's like, all right, we'll leave at 6:40. I said, we'll leave at 7. I said, he's going to be late. Like, there's no doubt. But no, you're.
I was early and I got here and then I'm going to go get my dough.
All right. Well, let's wrap this up. last thing I just want to say is, all right, one piece of advice you give anybody for hunting the rut, they're taking their rutcation, what would it be, John?
Advice.
One thing that you, if you could tell somebody.
To hunt the rut, like November.
How are they going to get through it? Like the mental thing, like the spot, like what is something that you're like one thing that they could do to help better their odds?
I think the biggest thing is be, especially during a rut, be mentally optimistic, because it's the rut and stuff can happen anytime, and just stay there and stick with it. And everybody's, I think humans are pessimists by nature, and it's easy to say, it's cold out here, I ain't seen no deer, and you want to go home. But if you really, and it comes back to how bad you want it, but be optimistic, and, you know, it's the rut, and something could happen anytime, and there's deer around and does, and I'm out, and I'm alive, and just hunt.
Yep. I like it. Dad?
I'd say play the cards you're dealt with. You're dealt a hand, play it out, put the time in, like Johnny says. You know, don't cut it short, because anything can happen at any time.
Yeah.
Yeah, I kind of want to piggyback on what these guys said is the more time you spend, the better odds you have. And I guess just stack the odds in your favor. Do what's going to be confident for you. And you only have to try and figure it out. You only have to be right once.
Yeah.
And the one thing I've said recently is, like, if you look at it like this, is like the more time I spend in a tree brings me closer to the time I kill the deer. Like, the more it's going to happen at some point. It might be in 2 years, but you're whittling away the time until it happens.
Yeah.
Well, so you're getting closer.
It's not very often that any of us sitting here have gone in the woods and killed a buck within the first half hour, except for Bo last year.
Yeah, that was an hour and a half.
Hour and a half. But, I mean, that's a rare occasion. I mean, I'd be interested to know, I mean, how many hours you put into the season, how many you put into the season. On a normal season, you add them up. I mean, I know I've sat, you know, 21, 22 days without.
You just got to put your time in, and you only got to be right once.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
That's what it comes down to.
Yeah, I think there's no shortcut to it. And, like, you know, I've heard, like, oh, you know, I don't have this time and stuff. Well, sometimes if you don't have the time, that's gonna be at your fault. Like, there's no you know way I can say to you, Mason, okay, you have 3 days to hunt. Oh, this is what you're going to do to be successful. Sometimes it takes longer than that. Like, there's no, and you know, you're hunting big woods, you're hunting low deer density. Like, that's just what it's going to be. There's sometimes it takes that time, but it takes, you know, taking advantage of all that time. The standpoint of, like, again, I've interviewed hundreds of people on this podcast, and the people that are most successful, whether it's whitetail, mule deer, elk, are the ones that waited out to the very end. The last time that bell rings, they're hunting till that point. Yeah. And a lot of times it happens in that last minute. But like you said, at any point, you could be sitting there. I've had it where I'm sitting there at noon, half days and off. 2017, I remember I was like, I kept looking at my phone. You know, you set goals like throughout the day of like things like, I'm going to eat a snack at 11, or I'm going to do this just to get you through the day. And I remember I was like, at noon, I'm gonna get down and I'm gonna check that camera that's right in front of me here that I didn't check on the way in, and I'm looking. I'm 11:57, you know, 11:58. Here comes the buck in. I end up killing him, yeah. Right there. And it's like, things can happen at any moment.
Yep.
So you just gotta be there and you gotta be ready. So anytime, you know, whether you have 20 days to spend out there or whether you have 3, you need to make the most of that time, in my opinion, to do that. The more time you spend, the better that you have. So
I always tell myself, like what you said, like, I'm staying till 11 o'clock, because there's times in the past I'm gonna stay till 11 and like 10:45 you get down and a deer runs. I'm like, I'm not doing it. So like long ago I told myself, so I got it. Like today, I had to get down at 10:30. I had phone calls to make at 11, and it's like 10:27. I'm like, nope. I need to wait it. And then if I do get down and jump a deer, it's like, well, I made that decision. I planned to get down at that time for whatever reasons, you know. But,
yeah,
you know, there's times when I was younger, it's like, oh, I seen on. I get down, and here goes the deer. I'm like.
I like your strategy as far as when you go into a stand site where you have a camera, don't pull the card before you climb up.
Yeah.
Because if you pull the card and you climb up there and – you don't have nothing good on it because they were skirting. Maybe they were skirting the camera.
It's all mental.
Confidence it's shot.
If you set the goal, and I do that a lot as you do, to where, okay, 11 o'clock or noon, I'm going to get down. I'm going to pull that card. I'm going to climb back in the tree before I even look at it.
Mm-hmm.
So that I'm back in that tree. And it you gives me another half hour, even an hour, if there isn't anything on the card. Where I stay a little longer yet, but yeah, you got to play that mental game. You got to beat your mind.
Yeah, you got to play yourself. And you know, I remember talking about staying longer. Last thing I'll say is, I remember when I come home from college when you used to let me hunt your tree stands. When you were like, go to the spot, you're like, sit till 11:30. I'm like, it's like 9:30. I'm like, one time I'm like climbing down. I'm like slowly getting down. I'm halfway down the ladder. Here comes a 10-point, and I'm like, you got to be kidding me. I get down. I grab my bow, and I'm thinking I could do it. I think I was using your bow even. I was using my own bow. I went to draw back. I pulled the nock right out of the arrow because I had my finger wrapped around it because it was like before the, you know, full capture type things. I was like squeezing so hard. I pulled the nock right out of the arrow, and the arrow was like dangling there. I'm at full draw, and thought about just dry firing it, and I was just like, what do I do? You know, putting it down, and I never got a shot, and he went off, and then next weekend I'm home again, climb back up there. I sat till 10, not when he told me to. Similar, I can't remember if something blew at me or whatever, but it was a scenario along those lines. And I'm like, now it's like I tried to sit all day, but like if I'm gonna have a goal, like you said, what you said, like I even did that the other morning when it wasn't even as critical, wasn't during the rut, but it was like I had a goal of 10:30, like that's when I was gonna get out, because I had a podcast at noon, so I was like, I had to make some. I was like, I think I can get my everything tore down in that time frame, but as soon as it hit that dot, that's when I was going. I wasn't getting out at 10:25. I wasn't, because I'd be mad at myself forever if I, you know, something happened. But all right, well, we've been going for an hour and 58 minutes.
Whoa,
so
it's a lot of hot air.
It's coming out of your head. No, this is a good episode here. So thanks guys for coming on. Hopefully this helps all of you out during the rut. I think the mental game is the biggest thing, as we've all kind of discussed here. Have faith in your spots. A lot of times you know where's a good spot. You know what sign looks like. You know what kind of deer will be traveling through. Just give it time and
send it.
Send an arrow through the pump house, right, John?
That's it, man.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode of East Meets West Hunt with your host, Bo Martonic. For more great content and to stay up to date, visit eastmeetswesthunt.com, Facebook at East Meets West Outdoors, and Instagram at East Meets West Hunt. If you enjoyed today's episode, please review and subscribe, and we'll catch you next time.